Okay, so I'm now in Minneapolis, and do you want to introduce yourself?
Yep, my name's Kieran, and I'm a member of the Industrial Workers of the World, and I've been involved in anarchist activity in the Midwest, and especially in Minneapolis, for the last 20 years or more.
Okay, so let's start off with the city itself. What's Minneapolis like?
See, Minneapolis, St. Paul are the Twin Cities. They're the northernmost metropolitan area on the Mississippi River. They're in the, together in the metropolitan area, they're in the top 15 cities in the United States. And they're one of the most heavily white of the metropolitan areas, but that's changing rapidly. There's been heavy immigration of Mexicans and other Latin Americans, also a large community from East Africa, mostly Somalis, but also Oromos, other Ethiopians, and Eritreans, and then Southeast Asians, especially Hmong, are the other big component of the immigration here.
And what sort of work do people do here? Is there any particular industries?
Traditionally, this had been a city with that was built around mills, and then there was light industry, you know, of different kinds throughout, up and through the 70s and 80s. As that stuff is closed out, for instance, there was a Ford plant here that's closing this year. The industries that survive, I mean, there's still small manufacturing, very small light manufacturing here. There's medical device making. There's a lot of corporate headquarters here, so there's a lot of actually of office work, clerical work. There's a major university here. There's the headquarters for Northwestern Airlines, for General Mills, for Honeywell, and several other of the big, you know, multinationals are here. So all the kinds of work that go in sustaining those kinds of headquarters are here. But then, you know, there's also the things that all big cities have. There's transportation, hospitals, you know, education, all those kinds of things.
And in terms of, you know, major political issues in the city at the moment, what sort of stuff's happening?
Well, let's see. Some of the big issues that have been going on over the last couple of years, I would say, the first one that I'd say significant since we moved back is something that's going on in all the big American cities, that the relatively better paid unionized workforce is being cut to the bone, and they're trying to, basically there's a serious attempt by the rulers to make, you know, the American workforce compete with the wages internationally, and so that means substantial wage cuts for groups like auto workers, workers in the airline industry, and in transportation, like bus drivers. So there have been struggles that have broken out around that. We were part of a significant strike of the Northwest Airlines mechanics and cleaners, and so that's a significant struggle. There's an anti-war movement. For the city of this size, there's a pretty substantial left here, so the war is definitely an issue that's out there and that there has been action around. Unlike sort of previous incarnations of the anti-war movement, there isn't really a radical left component of it. In previous anti-war movements, there have been an anarchist presence, and that isn't really the case now. There hasn't been an organized anarchist presence in the anti-war movement. I can get into a couple of things that may change that coming up, but further back out, there's a major struggle that involved environmentalists and anarchists and Native Americans around the construction of a freeway through an area that had been a forested area still inside the city that had also been a burial ground for Dakota Indians. And so there's a major struggle over that development around Highway 55, an encampment, and the police ended up ousting everybody in a pretty violent confrontation. But that was like a year-long struggle. And a whole bunch of anarchists young people got politicized and brought into the anarchist movement through that struggle. And I actually wasn't living in the cities at that point. I was out of Minneapolis for about 7 years, and 2 years in Detroit and 5 years in Chicago. And so my history in the anarchist movement, you know, there's kind of like a gap. And when I come back, there's like this whole wave of anarchists that had participated in this environmental struggle and been more informed by like green anarchist politics or anti-organizational anarchist politics than the people that I was running with had been.
And in terms of radical history, I mean, Minneapolis would be known as a union town, but how far does that go back?
It goes back to the 30s. There was a major struggle in 1934, the Teamsters, which was led by a socialist Trotskyist organization, although their leadership had all been come out of the Wobblies and gotten their training in the IWW. There was a huge strike that shut down the city for several weeks, and there were pitched battles in the street between the union and the police, and even the bosses had an organization that actually fielded people on the streets alongside the cops to fight the workers in order to get beat up by the workers. And so it had this the feel of a general strike, in that there could be no transportation of commercial goods on the streets without the Teamsters' okay. And eventually they were able to win that, and that sort of broke this organization called the Citizens Alliance, which was a bosses' organization that one of the major goals was to keep the unions out of Minneapolis. That's a pretty famous struggle that there's been a lot of books written about. There's a book called Teamster Rebellion. There's a book called American City. Both of those are about that struggle.
Yeah, I noticed a poster inside that was a picnic, I think it was, to commemorate the anniversary. Are people in the city generally aware of that history?
Not as much as you'd hope to. I mean, there is still, there are obvious lines that connect the generations. When I first moved back to Minneapolis, the first project I worked on was another commemoration, a different one that we did for the 75th anniversary, our 70th anniversary. And we did a street party on that intersection that I showed you where the Bloody Friday massacre took place, where the police opened fire on striking workers and shot, 61 workers, I think, and two of them died. So we did a commemoration on that intersection with mostly with bands, but also with big photos from the strike on easels and some reenactments and some really good music, punk bands and hip-hop and folk bands and speakers, too, about different struggles going on and about stuff relating back to them. And we got about 1,000 people over the course of the day to come through that. And so that was a very positive thing. So, and we were able to get some media attention out of that as well. So we've been able to keep that alive. And certainly among labor, people who are labor activists, there's an awareness of that. And that's important because it's a mass direct action that was successful. Keeping in more recent history, like in the 60s and 70s, one that I did describe to you, there was actually a big co-op movement here, where there was a number of different kinds of stores and other different kinds of counter institutions that were under workers' control that were run democratically by workers. And it actually, there was over a dozen of them, and it actually split into two different factions. One was a Marxist-Leninist group and one was an anarchist group. And it actually came to blows between the two factions over control of these different co-ops. But it was actually a significant movement, not just sort of on the various margins of the society, but it was actually something that hundreds of people were involved in, and thousands more people, shopped at them or self-sustained them in one way or another. And that was one thing that happened in the 70s. And then my political involvement was came through the anti-war stuff, that an anarchist group I was part of that was heavily influenced by the British anarchist groups, including groups like Class War, was part of the militant wing of the anti-war movement against Reagan's policies and actions in Central America. And so there was a big anti-war movement against Reagan sending troops to the border of Nicaragua in 1988. And our collective was part of a broader coalition that had huge demonstrations, and including some militant action, like smashing up a military recruiting center and spray painting and breaking windows on the federal building, but all in sort of a mass action way. And then there have been a number of struggles here over time in the African-American community, especially against police brutality. There's always been historically a strong women's movement and feminist movement in the cities. There was a ACT UP here during the AIDS crisis, and a fairly strong gay and lesbian consciousness and movement here. And then more recently, with the wave of Mexican immigrants here, in every major city in the United States, just about, the May Day actions of 2 years ago were really significant, where basically the Mexican community didn't go to work, didn't go to school, and there was a mass march in St. Paul at the Capitol that I showed you of about 40,000 almost completely working class people. It was an incredible show of force. So that's a new movement that's happened, and that stuff is still echoing in smaller struggles that have broken out in different workplaces and unionizing efforts where those immigrant workers are part of it.
One other thing actually you mentioned as we were driving around was that Minneapolis was, I think, the source of the American Indian movement that came out
of
here.
Absolutely, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I hate to forget that part. Yeah, I mean, Minneapolis is one of the larger concentrations of urban communities of Native American people. It also has one of the states that has a larger number of Indian reservations, both Anishinaabe, Ojibwe, Chippewa, and Dakota or Sioux Indians are in Minnesota. And the movement around Indian issues, Native rights and sovereignty has always been a big one in Minnesota. And the American Indian movement was started by some Native people that lived in Minneapolis, including some ex-prisoners who wanted to organize something similar to what they saw the Black Panther Party doing. And so that came out of discussions here, and they formed something called the AIM Patrol, which patrolled the police in the same way that the Black Panthers had been doing that in Oakland. And then since Minneapolis is the largest serious urban center, and since it has a large Native population, the actions that AIM did in South Dakota definitely had an echo here. Some of the trials were here for people from Wounded Knee, and also a lot of the support for Wounded Knee came out of Minneapolis.
Probably worth mentioning briefly what Wounded Knee was.
Wounded Knee is a town in South Dakota on the Pine Ridge Reservation. It's where a historic massacre took place of Native people who were practicing the ghost dance in the 1870s, I want to say. And in the 1970s, the American Indian movement, who'd been working with the part of the community that was hanging on to its traditions against a really corrupt reservation government, rose up and seized the main buildings in Wounded Knee on Pine Ridge, and it turned into a big standoff. Eventually the FBI and the Army came in. It led to a battle. And it's interesting because they've compared like the death rates in Indian South Dakota were comparable to like Northern Ireland at its peak in terms of the amount of people that were killed in the proportion of population. It was basically the same kind of environment in South Dakota on the reservations in the 70s. And so all that's the sort of AIM at its peak, and Minneapolis was certainly connected to all that. I mean, basically, you know, there's been struggles here on a lot of different fronts, for sure.
Talking about specifically anarchist history in the city, I mean, I think I first got to know the name Twin City from reading old issues of the Love and Rage newspaper.
Right.
I didn't actually know what it meant then. I was always kind of curious as to what exactly this meant. You were pretty much involved in that from the start, I think?
Yeah. The Love and Rage was founded by a few different groups. Two of the major ones was a socialist group that had decided that they agreed more with anarchism than they did with Marxist-Leninism, called the Revolutionary Socialist League. They didn't have a group in Minneapolis, but we were communicating with them. And our collective was called the Revolutionary Anarchist Bowling League, or RAVL. And we were sort of like the main other component of Love and Rage. There was a few other collectives that were also involved. There was a Bay Area Anti-Racist Action, and a group in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I'm forgetting a couple others. A group in Atlanta, and a group in Miami, actually, of Latinos, but Minneapolis was the one of the main groups. And so RAVL, which had its own history, it had its own history for several years, was one of the founding groups of Love and Rage.
Apart from, I mean, what developed from that point in terms of the local stuff in Minneapolis?
Well, the other things that were going on in Minneapolis, I should say, too, is there was a real significant punk scene here, too, like Profane Existence, which was kind of like the premier U.S. political punk magazine, came out of Minneapolis. And there's always a big scene of political punks here, too. So, and that all existed pretty much, for the most part, outside of RAVL. So there's a larger anarchist scene outside of RAVL and outside of Love and Rage. And at a certain point, RAVL as a collective ceased to exist, and instead we just had Love and Rage Minneapolis, and that included people that, you know, at one point I think we had like 15 members here or something, and included people involved in anti-fascist work, which was a big area of work for Twin Cities anarchists, but also prison work and work around solidarity with the Zapatistas, and then around different issues as they came up. And since Love and Rage split and basically collapsed, there hasn't been the same kind of like all sort of like all-purpose action collective of anarchists here that tried to relate to multiple different kinds of struggles and tried to be an anarchist voice in the different movements. So that's basically since Love and Rage broke up, there hasn't been that kind of thing here. That, you know, there's been different projects and different anarchist activity in certain movements, but not like an effort to have kind of like a permanent anarchist organization.
And so what does currently exist in the city in terms of bookshops,
right.
IWW, all that sort of thing?
Well, there's a whole lot of people who identify themselves as anarchists, and that would be a wide range of people who wouldn't necessarily agree on much. There's people involved in the few remaining co-ops that still do exist. More and more of them have been gone out of business or become corporate and drop the workers' control. But there's one or two that still exist, and some of their workers consider themselves anarchists. There's people around Arise, which is a bookshop that you're going to be speaking at tomorrow. There's people involved. There's people that are doing art stuff that used to be involved in like anti-fascist stuff, both doing music and other kinds of art. And then there's like me and myself. I've been involved in the Industrial Workers of the World, which is in our city, in our branch anyways, is activists, both people who are organizing in workplaces that are not unionized and people like myself that are in places that do have a union of one of the traditional mainstream unions but are trying to build a radical presence in the workplace beyond just the regular mainstream union. And then the other big thing that I would say is as significant as the IWW or maybe even larger is the RNC Welcoming Committee, which is the Republican National Committee Welcoming Committee. It's a tongue-in-cheek name because the Republicans are having their national convention in the Twin Cities this fall, or Labor Day, actually. And so they've been planning now for over a year about how to resist that. And that's sort of a broad umbrella of people that would include people from, like, crime think type of politics to green anarchist politics to people who have a community organizing orientation. So it's a broad range of people.
The traditional last question I end with is asking people what their attitudes to the whole U.S. electoral process is, and in particular Bill Clinton versus Obama thing.
My attitude is that I think that, I don't think anarchists should participate in the U.S. elections. I don't think we should support either of the candidates from the Democratic Party. I think that, they're both totally tied to and representative of the ruling class, and that their policies will be, a continuation of neoliberal attacks on working class people and other oppressed people in this country. I think that there's a lot. I think that doesn't mean that we should just not pay attention to what's going on within the elections. And I think it's important to pay attention to what different phenomena mean. For instance, in my workplace, there are a bunch of young workers who have been involved with us in a campaign against our sort of incompetent and conservative union leadership are really influenced by Obama, or really wanting Obama to be something. I think obviously something that he's not, but have a lot of illusions in Obama. So one of the things I've been struggling with is how do you approach that? Because I don't necessarily want to just, I explain my position and I try and explain what I'm seeing Obama saying and representing, but I'm not trying to just shake my finger at them and tell them they're stupid for thinking Obama's good. Basically, the policy I'm trying to, put out there is, if you're going to vote for Obama, go ahead and vote for Obama, but don't have any illusions as to what you're going to get from that. And then try and really emphasize that real change comes from social movements from below. And that whoever's president, if it's Hillary, if it's Obama, if it's McCain, they'll all have to respond to strong social movements from below. And if that's, and people don't necessarily disagree with that. So, but, it's an ongoing dialogue with people.